A line of thunderstorms was developing in the early morning hours ahead of a slow-moving cold front. Cold blood. With tornado watches issued shortly before noon Sunday for the areas including the western region of my mental health and the northern portion of my ability to deal rationally with my disconcerted, precarious emotional situation. Cold out there. Cold on the ticket taker smile at the Ivor Theater on Saturday night. Flash flood watches cover the southern portion of my disposition.
Yeah.
But there was no severe weather well into the afternoon, except for kind of a lone gust of wind in the bedroom.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Bienvenue à tout le monde. And it is a Friday's broadcast of the French Connection. Great to be here today with you. It is going to be a very interesting program today. It's the third day of February. It's a Friday. It's cold, cold, cold where I am. It's up down to about 20 degrees Fahrenheit. And wind is howling, and it's nice and warm in the house, and it's great to be here to do the show with you. You know, ladies and gentlemen, we've been pounding hard, myself and my co-workers on the French Connection, trying to get a lot of different truths out about Zionism and about all these other subjects. And, you know, I want to make sure again that everyone knows we are working very, very closely with the Jewish community to try to ensure that there is no backlash against any innocent people in this whole endeavor. This is a very, very important aspect of our work. But we're going to take a break from that a little bit today, and we're going to go and talk to a friend of mine who has been on my show many times. In fact, I'm not even sure if this is her third or fourth visit in a year. Her name is Annie Machon, and Annie Machon is the girlfriend of David Shiler, whom you will know that David was the first show that he ever did in the United States. It was mine, in fact. I invited David over to the United States to do a show with me back when I was on another network, in fact. And he has done all the major shows since then, but, of course, I introduced him to America, and David and I are good friends, and so am I a friend with Annie as well. She was an MI5 agent, and so was David, and privy to a great number of events that took place over time in Britain, and many of the events that she witnessed were not legal. Well, the way they were executed were against British law, and some of them even against international law, being that they were actually supporting or not reporting or perpetrating themselves different types of violence and even terrorism, ladies and gentlemen, by today's definition, in Northern Ireland, as well as down Libya, ladies and gentlemen, Libya. Anyway, so she's going to come out the bottom of the hour. So, well, you know, yesterday's show was a watershed event for the French Connection because, well, first of all, the website was off the hook. We had 16,000 visits to the website yesterday, which is a very good visiting. I mean, 16,000 people. It was a wonderful improvement over last month, and I hope it continues. The job we did yesterday was, I think, exemplary in that we used our best and brightest and greatest efforts to make the available information cited and referenced and easily understood. And, you know, if you've got the shoutcast situation or you're listening at Genesis or wherever, you're able to replay these things, these files, and here, once again, the site information, so you yourself can go check the information, and we urge you to do that. It is important that you also are aware that this information is freely available to everyone. It just has to be dug out. We're information miners, and we are dot connectors, and I don't think we have been wrong on anything, including our take on all the different issues within the movement itself, within this Truth Patriot movement, which is a very odd name for this type of movement, because most of the people in it are not patriots at all, in fact. Anyway, to try and get this whole thing underway in the way that we think it needs to be done, of course, I've been calling on you folks to start helping me recruit new listeners. And I guess the best way to do that is to explain to people the basis of our claims and then point them to Benjamin Friedman and allow them to listen to that Benjamin Friedman download. Once they've heard this, you cannot help but be interested in more knowledge on this subject if you are truly interested in what's going on in the world. So assuming you've picked a person that's going to be interested in what's going on in the world, after they've heard Ben Friedman, they can go on to the other stuff we've got on the website. Then they can start graduating to the other information we've dug up. And I think this is probably a logical first, second, and third step to bringing people into this, because truly, if you hear the way we were speaking last night, you would think either this was a religious radio show, or we were whacked in some way, nutty or something, or we were just, you know, talking about a subject that very few people even have any knowledge of. All three of those things are untrue. There are a lot of people becoming quite knowledgeable about this information. We're not at all whacked. In fact, we are extremely sane, in the extreme, I think, Eric and I. We're very rational and not taken too lightly to things that we discover. We do the due diligence. And, you know, I don't suffer fools very well. That's always been one of my problems. My wife says I'm a little too blunt with people. And, you know, that's probably true, looking at how other people react in life and how I do. I just have very little time for nonsense, and I usually cut people to the quick. Either in emails or even in person, and my wife actually gets red-faced often and slaps me behind the back and says, "What are you doing?" And what are you going to do? You know, it's just the way I am. I'm not that sociable a guy. I'm socially affable, but I'm certainly not a sociable guy, and never claimed to be. You know, I didn't get into this this whole thing to be a popular radio show host. That was not my intent in the beginning, nor is it my intent today. In fact, if we were able to get a movement on all these issues, I might well melt away into the back into my old life that I had before, trying to enjoy what I can of it. Because, as you know, I struggle with not feeling all that great most of the time, and so doing this really wears me out. It does. It makes me tired, and tired's the thing, not depressed. Because I think we're going to beat these folks soundly. I think the information we've already put out is going to destroy them over time already. It'll remain to be seen how quickly we can pull down their veneers and get these people on the ropes. But trust in me, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to do just that. So when we come back, we've got some things to talk about, some issues, before we bring Annie Machon on at the bottom of the hour. Be right back. We are back. Daryl Bradford Smith, your host. IamTheWitness.com is the website. Now, I wanted to go over a couple of things right now. One of them is the price of gold, ladies and gentlemen. If you haven't been following the price of gold, it is presently at, about 568, but it reached as high as 579 yesterday. That's almost 580 per ounce, ladies and gentlemen, 580 per ounce. That is unbelievable. That is, in 1 year, it is up 35% in a year. And experts are talking about it topping off well above 600. I thought it would hit 600 in January. But it's actually taken a month and a half or possibly 2 months longer than I had first imagined it would take to get to 600. But there we are. It's getting there. Those of you who have bought gold are smiling. If you've bought silver, you're also quite happy with the fact that you're owning silver. And I thought I'd give you an update on that. It is a very, very, very good idea to still get in. You may be able to get a price on a pullback right around 550 or 545, like that. It might be a great opportunity to get into some gold for yourselves and protect your family's finances because, you know, the dollar's been tanking and gold is surging. There we go. You know, news items. It is, of course, the first weekend here after this after this State of the Union nightmare. And, of course, a lot of people have been talking about the Super Bowl and the events around it, and everybody's fearful that there'll be some kind of event. And, you know, I don't know anything about whether there will be or there won't be. In fact, it seems to me that there probably would not be. The odds are, you know, certainly against it. But on the other hand, too, you know, you've got to think it would be a big splash. But how many people today would even believe that a terrorist did that? I have to wonder, you know, they say that as high as 50 to 60% of the public now don't believe that the government told the 60%, I think, don't believe the government told the truth on 9/11. So what makes anyone think in this government that they would believe this next attack? And so it doesn't seem like to me it would be something that they would be able to put over. It really doesn't. Doesn't mean they wouldn't try. I mean, these people have proven themselves to be out of their minds. And have, you know, have no compunctions and no reserve when it comes to making crazy crazy decisions. And of course, if it happens on foreign soil, and it's blamed on Al Qaeda, which you and I both know is just a sub company or a filial in French or one of the organizations built, owned, and operated by MI6 and by the intelligence organizations of America, and also run by the Mossad, as you all know. And as this works out, this organization has not been outed completely in America. So if it happened on foreign soil, it might get sold to the American public as a real event. And, I think we need to brace for that. In fact, the French president was talking about terrorism on French soil and saying that he would nuke any country that did it to France, which makes me a little nervous that, they, you know, why would he be saying that on, it didn't make sense at the time that he did it. And in fact, many analysts were taken aback by the fact that he said that. And many people think France and America are having difficult times, and that's not true. Back channel. The Americans and the French are very, very closely organized, in fact. And, you know, you have to read between the lines, and you have to read sometimes some obscure periodicals to get the truth. But the fact is America and France are working quite closely together. And I couldn't be more unhappy about that because the people they're working with are absolute criminals. And I guess there is really no place in the Western world immune from the influence of these people. When we talk to Annie later, she's going to describe for everybody the, this Al-Qaeda lie, because they were trying to do some Muslim blaming in Libya. And it went terribly wrong. And, in fact, David Shiler was the person who caught wind of it and said something stinks here and took a stand against it, which was very brave of him. In fact, he got him thrown in French jail for a while. He was actually in jail for 9 months trying to fight extradition to Britain. So, lots of stuff. Got a great book out, too, they do. You know, every now and again, we have to shift gears here. I mean, Christopher is back trying to do a little extra research. Eric is out trying to do his part to bring more information to you. We want to make sure the stuff we bring has been thoroughly checked and made available through, through the right processes, because in each instance, we have to avoid ever being called racist and xenophobic and anti-Semitic. And we also have to be able to stave off the claims that we are overstating or exaggerating our positions or even fabricating things. As you and I both know, in this world today, once the talking heads get talking, if they've got the bigger soapbox, we are discredited, because most people don't spend any time to look below the surface to what the facts really are. And as a result of that mindset, you know, we could get painted with this broad brush of anti-Semitism, which would not be right. In fact, as you heard yesterday, the real racists in this fight are the Zionists themselves. And you need to take a look at some of the claims that they've been making over time about their right to be supreme in this world. And that, in by its definition, is a racist position to take. It's funny, these people, it's the pot calling the kettle black, ladies and gentlemen. And, you know, I got to tell you something. The hubris in these people, the incredible gall to be the most racist organization in the history of humanity and run around saying that everybody else is racist. It's just amazing. It's a perfect deflector. It works so well. Another thing, I was listening to Jack Blood's show earlier, and he had something on that absolutely knocked me over with this aspartame thing. I knew aspartame was bad. I knew it was real bad, and I don't use the stuff. I simply don't put that crap in my body. I don't eat OGM food, and I don't do that to me, because first of all, there's no flavor to any of those things, and I love tasty things, and it's just not good for you. So I just haven't done it. But there are tens of millions of people across the world who use this product every day in multiple doses through. Even it's even put into vitamins, ladies and gentlemen. We bought a box of vitamin C, and I looked at it, and because it was semi-sweet, and I said, "What did they put sugar in this?" I looked on the back of it; it had aspartame in the vitamin C. Now you make sense out of that. This is a neurotoxin, so I'm going to take vitamin C to clear up my cold and give myself a brain tumor. Oh, who could write this stuff if it was, you think it's fiction, but it's not. It's real. When we come back, we have Annie Machon, and we got lots of questions for her. Stick with us. More from The French Connection. And we're back, ladies and gentlemen. It's half past 10 o'clock here in central France, and I think it's half past 9 in London. And we're going to bring up my guest in a second here. I want to give her a proper introduction. She's first of all, we've spent a lot of time on the phone together as well as, investigating things. She spent her early part of her life working in the intelligence field and became a little discouraged with the things she found while there, and as a result has come out of that organization and begun to take a look at it more critically, and in fact has done a lot of speaking out about the things she found while she was there. She's been on the show a couple of times. She was with MI5. Her name is Annie Machon. And Annie, are you with me?
I am indeed. Hello.
Hi, Annie. How you been?
Not too bad. Very busy. How are you?
Well, I'm okay, and, you know, it's nice to have you back on The French Connection. You know, each time you come, we discuss some of the ways that, these organizations that you were part of for a time, how they operate. And the fact that the last time I talked to David, he made it clear that one of the things people think that these intelligence organizations are extremely efficient. If you watched a Hollywood movie, let's say the Bourne Supremacy, and from space they could see the person's car license plate, and all of a sudden they switched to a computer and they got him picture entering a train, and this is all within 5 minutes and in some control room. And I thought to myself, what a farce, because while they may have some of these technologies, this is not a seamless organization, is it?
No, absolutely not. And in fact, I was in MI5 in the mid-1990s, and at that point, they still didn't even have computers for the intelligence officers to work on. You had to write everything out by hand and get your secretary to type it and then correct it. So they were way behind the curve, although I'm sure they've probably caught up quite sort of drastically since then. Well, I have to say that. I mean, that sort of technology is commercially available now, isn't it? I mean, anyone can go on Earth Google and have a look at the street in which they live, so...
Well, but that's right. But, you know, it's interesting. We all think, you know, as soon as we get involved in complaining about the government, we're going to be investigated six ways from center, and they're going to be peeking through our windows and looking through our mail. When quite the opposite is true. I mean, they don't, first of all, don't have the apparatus for that. They don't have the numbers for that. They don't have the intel for that. They do go after individuals that they feel are a high priority, but certainly not the rank and file in the society. Am I correct in that?
Well, yes and no. I hate to sound equivocal, but I mean, they had a massive interest in the left wing of the political spectrum, for example, in the 70s, 80s, and early 90s in the UK. And the coverage of those groups was pretty blanket coverage. This is just for fellow UK citizens holding political views. I mean, it was just appalling. But having said that now, of course, it's come out recently in the British media that MI5 just hasn't got any clues about the run-up to the London bombing last July. They had some low-level intelligence on two of the bombers about a year and a half before the bombs went off, looked at them briefly, decided they were of no interest, and then just dropped looking at them. So these guys were all running around, and they've done this massive investigation into the run-up to the attacks now, and they just can't find out if there was a real link to Al-Qaeda or anything like that.
Well, all they have to do is look at the guy that's sitting next to them, and it probably was him.
Yeah, well, I think there's quite a lot of racial problems as well when it comes to that.
Well, I mean, no. I mean, some of these guys, I mean, it was probably one of their colleagues who was getting paid a little extra to do this job.
Well,
because I got to tell you, it was an inside job from start to finish.
I have to say, there have been so many questions raised about it, so many inconsistencies in what's passed as the official story, although in this country, you never get a proper official story on the record. You only get leaks from tame government ministers down to tame sort of spooks and tame journalists. So it's very difficult to get at the truth. There are some howling holes in this whole story they're expected to believe.
Yeah, well, you know, when I came over to London to do that show on the Arabic channel, and David showed up, it was only about 4 or 5 days after the event. And I got on TV and told everybody it was a farce and a lie. And, boy, people were up in arms in the studio. They say, you can't say that on TV. And
you say that sort of thing in this country, you get labeled a traitor. You know, not if you allow these attacks to happen, not politicians who lie and take us into illegal wars abroad. It's people who stand up for what they believe to be the truth. And they're always the ones who are called traitors.
Well, David laughed, and I laughed. I'll tell you something. We left that place in stitches saying to ourselves, boy, did we just cause a tidal wave. But here's the thing. When you guys were working there, there were events that took place, especially under David's watch, where he knew things were going on in Libya that didn't add up to very even close to legal. And he became very disenchanted with the way he was viewing his organization, didn't he?
Oh, massively. I mean, when we were recruited, I mean, we were in our early 20s and perhaps we were slightly naive, but we thought we could make a difference. We were recruited to investigate terrorism. By the time we left, and the most serious thing we saw going wrong was, as you say, around Libya, where MI6, which is the overseas intelligence gathering arm of British intelligence, the real James Bonds, they like to think of it, had actually gone and funded Islamic extremist terrorists in Libya to carry out an assassination attempt against their head, Colonel Gaddafi. They knew what they were getting into. They knew that what has now become termed Al-Qaeda was supposed to be the new great big threat because they'd been the World Trade Center bombing in 1993.
That's
and yet
right.
They went ahead and gave these people about $100,000 to carry out this attack against Gaddafi. They didn't get government permission, which means that the attack was illegal. Not, you know, putting aside questions of morality and ethics, it was illegal under British law. And innocent people died. I mean, not only in the bombing itself, but in the ensuing shootout. So the whole thing was a shambles. I have to say now, looking back with hindsight, which is always wonderful vision, isn't it? We now think that that was probably the first attempt to invade an oil-rich Middle East country. Either the Islamic extremists would have taken power in Libya in the ensuing power vacuum, and then they would have owed a debt, so to speak, to British intelligence, and they would have allowed them to go in and make deals around the oil. Or, of course, the West could have turned around and said, oh, my God, this is terrible, the first Islamic state, it's fundamentalist Islamic state, let's go and invade, and, of course, then seize all the oil supplies. I mean, Libya's got a huge amount of oil. So you have to wonder if that was sort of a build-up to what's now going on, what's now hideously unfolding in the Middle East.
Well, it seems to me it might have been a practice run, just like you're describing. And, you know, they're in the book, and you know, Spies, Lies, and Whistleblowers, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, is the name of the book. You can link to the book on my website, or you can look it up on the Internet and go directly to where I think it's on Amazon.uk.
That's right, .co.uk.
Yeah, so you can go to Amazon.co.uk or my website. Either place will get you the book. I've read it. I read it, in fact, the first time you were on the radio with me about 10 months ago. Now, there were other things that you, during your tenure with the organization, that raised some flags, especially around the Northern Ireland issues of how some people within the organization were actually playing both sides of the fence or, in fact, working side by side with known murderers.
Yes, and absolutely.
And these kind of moral lapses were not you didn't expect to see this kind of stuff coming out of the government, especially against their own people.
Well, yes. I mean, when we were being recruited, we were, and this, again, is the early 1990s, we were told that MI5 was now an official organization. It hadn't officially existed for 80 years, but it was made put on an official basis in 89. It had to work within the law. And this was told to us time and time again, so we thought.
Well, wait, we got a break coming up, Annie. These breaks come pretty quick, so we got to do it in little bits and bites here. When we come back, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go right back to that question and many more from Annie Machon. Stick with us. Great to be with you here on this Friday. Daryl Bradford Smith, your host on The French Connection. It is the third day of February, and we have with us today in this segment, and for a couple of more, Annie Machon. She is a ex-MI5 agent and the girlfriend and co-writer and partner with David Shiler. And they've been working over in Britain to try to bring some truth to the public over there. I want to go right back to you though on the Northern Ireland thing, because that really was the first indication in Britain, I think, to the British people that there was something wrong with the intelligence services, because many of the events of Northern Ireland were being propagated or at least overseen by these folks, and it's pretty painful stuff to read, actually, isn't it?
Oh, it's horrific. It was an incredibly prolonged and dirty war, and the intelligence services had a vested interest to keep it prolonged because it was jobs for the boys. I mean, we saw instances of MI5 having intelligence, very good intelligence, of bombs which are about to go off, and not acting on it. So the bombs went off and innocent people died. We had intelligence of, we had information as well about intelligence not being received in time, and then MI5 lies to the government of the day in order to cover up their mistakes. And again, bombs go off and innocent people die. But I think what's really shocked people is woken people up to what's gone on in the last 30 years there. There have been a couple of inquiries that have been going on in the last few years, one of which has established there was an agent called Stake Knife, codenamed Stake Knife, who was very senior in the IRA enforcement group, the Nutting Squad, as it was called. And he was going around and assassinating and torturing and killing other MI5 agents who were reporting on the terrorists. This was with complete collusion of his army and intelligence handlers. I mean, it's just disgusting. You know, these are people putting their lives on the line to try and change an awful situation in Northern Ireland, being tortured and murdered by this other guy who's supposed to be doing the same thing.
Well, so now when we look at the London bombing and there are maybe links to that we see to the government, or we look at 9/11 and people make inferences or possible links to the U.S. or Israeli or British governments, what you have to say that that's a credible possibility, don't you?
I
mean, look
at
the history.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, what people don't seem to realize, what people don't want to know, is the influence of the intelligence services, not just in the UK, but, you know, across the Western world, particularly in the States. You know, they have the power. And in the UK, for example, there is no parliamentary oversight of the spies. There is no political effective oversight. No one's got any power to go and investigate alleged crimes committed by our spies. So they are completely unaccountable. They hold files on most of the leading government ministers in this country at the moment, so of course they can put undue pressure on them, and they can get away with murder, literally.
Well, you know, I have the worst problems with my phone when I call Britain.
Any place
in the world.
I remember that when Dave and I were in exile in France, because of course we had to leave the UK when we went public about MI5's crimes, because we'd been slung in prison for a long period of time. You know, we kept trying to stay in contact with our friends, family, you know, journalists, whatever, and it was impossible. You know, of course, we have a branch of an eavesdropping organization called GCHQ, Government Communications Headquarters, which shares everything with the American NSA. So although they say, well, you know, we can't operate within our own countries, blah, 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 GCHQ can spy on Americans and give the information to the NSA and vice versa. There's no accountability again, and very few people seem to be aware of this.
Well, I'm pretty much aware of it. Whenever I call Felicity or I call you or I call someone else, I mean, you know, I watch my
phone
dance
are.
Across my desk, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So you always have to think about this. It's frightening, isn't it? You know,
it is pretty bad. Well, you, in spite of the challenges and in spite of the way that we are overseen by these folks, it has to be said that we're all responsible to do something about what we know. I mean, there are people out in this audience right now who want answers and they want solutions, Annie. And you know what? For the first time, I think we're starting to get some traction on the truth. I don't know how it's all going to play itself out, but certainly from what David was saying earlier today and what you said, you're starting to find a lot more receptive an audience to the truth.
Very much so. And I think, I mean, that's the one glimmer of hope that's come out of the mess in Iraq is the fact that in this country it was very clear that our Prime Minister took us into war on the basis of lies, of flawed intelligence. And he knew it was illegal while he was doing it, and he, of course, can be impeached and prosecuted for this. But that's really woken people up in this country to the sort of lies and mendacity, not only of the government, but of the intelligence services. And more and more stuff seems to be flooding out into the press here. It's all leaked, you know, of course, but that, in fact, they really aren't up to their job, and they don't obey the law. So they're not protecting our civil liberties. They're not adhering to the basic standards of democracy. But on the other hand, they can't do their job. They're just rubbish at it. So we're not being given the protection that we need. And I think people are really beginning to wake up. And in this country, for example, there's a big growing movement looking at the issues around 9/11. Linked to that, of course, is the issues of 7/7 and the London bombing.
Yeah.
And it's really taking off. I mean, we're doing talks all around the country, and the turnout's just getting bigger and bigger. So it does give us some hope.
Well, have you done any investigating as to the things we talked about, such as the dancing Israelis and the art students that were there and the moving companies, because they had a big hand in this along with the rest of these intelligence organizations. And I think, by and large, they were the organizers of it, Annie.
Mm-hmm.
When we come back, I'm going to ask you, did you get around to Ben Friedman's download?
I had a brief look, yeah.
It's pretty powerful, isn't it?
Yes.
When we come back, ladies and gentlemen, we got more from Annie Menschel. Don't go anywhere.
Scotch and soda. But in your eyes. Baby, do I feel high?
Ladies and gentlemen, we're back. Great to be with you today. We have an interview going here with Annie Menschel from MI5, retired. And Annie, after this top of the hour break, I want to at least get into the book a little bit and get into what you've been doing and where you've been doing it. You want to give us an idea of some of the venues you've had and the kind of responses you've been getting from people around the country and where you've been?
Yeah, well, it's been all sorts of different venues. I mean, from church halls through to theaters. And in fact, we were at the Oxford University Union Society last week, where normally they have quite high prominent debates. But in fact, they couldn't find anyone to oppose the issues we were talking about, which is that there needs to be another open, proper inquiry into 9/11 to look at some of the unanswered issues by the last inquiry. We've also been to Ireland. We've done a tour around Scotland, been over to Brussels, where we were part of the Axis for Peace meeting. So it's been quite hectic, as well as doing quite a lot of media around it as well. So it's been stimulating.
Well, I've been wondering, you know, if they're looking for the fall guys here. I mean, in America, we keep saying it's Bush and Blair and Bush and Cheney and Bush and, you know, it's all Bush and them. I think, honestly, the real culprits behind this are being whitewashed over, to be honest with you. That's what my research shows. And they're looking for fall guys here.
Well,
and of course,
They always do, don't they? They need patsies who will take the blame. They're convenient bugbears or bogeymen for people to be afraid of.
No, well, I mean, I think that Bush is looking like he's going to take a fall. He's going to take the hit for this. While he was certainly part of it, I don't think he was the orchestrator. And, you know, I gave you some insights into some people who were actually pulling the strings behind the scenes. And it's painful to think that we wouldn't get the real perpetrators. I don't know how many Brits were killed in 9/11. Do you have a number for that?
Not a precise figure, no. I think it was about 100, something like that. I'm not sure, though.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is not just an American incident. This was a worldwide murder because citizens from all over the globe were involved in that murder. And, you know, to think it's just the 9/11 is just a murderous event that was perpetrated against Americans is misunderstanding how many people really died there and where they were from. And I got to tell you, you know, the fact that people have not let this drop. I was always afraid we were going to get a John F. Kennedy style, you know, 40 years later, people still haven't got any results from their investigations on it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, but, we live in a very different era now, don't we? We have the internet. We've got, you know, information. We've got our visual evidence that we can look at. So it's a very different world now, and we can share this stuff and discuss it much more openly and much more easily.
Have you seen the book, The Painful Questions by Eric Hufschmidt?
I have indeed, yes.
That's my webmaster. You know that, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, and in fact, when he just wrote some new things about the death of people who were in the vicinity of the blast, there is a huge number of people dropping dead now from lung diseases that are turning out to be fatal.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
The killing goes on.
Yes, I know. I mean, thousands of people were affected by the elements, the materials that were thrown out of the buildings when they collapsed. I mean, there's all sorts of radioactive stuff went out, and lead and, you know, heavy metals and things like that. It's disgusting. So I'm not surprised.
Well, they actually were breathing in people's bodies and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Unbelievable, astonishing. But, you know, when we come back, I want to talk about the venues and some of the responses, some of the personalized events that you've been to, and what people have actually said to you after you've done your presentation. You got a 6-minute break, Annie, and we'll be right back after that break, ladies and gentlemen.